हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गराधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। ओके सो ब्रह्म संहिता देन वी आर ऑन इन द सेक्शन ऑफ Kambija and Kama Gayatri reveal all, and then we're in the purport by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on verses 24-25. Oh no, we just finished that. We're on the next page. This is Gopal Mantra. It's also known as Kambija. See, Gopal Mantra can be known as Kambija, or it can be known as Gopal Mantra, and Kambija can also refer to just the bead syllable itself, right? But much of the time it's just Kambija and Kama Gayatri. Kama Bija means the seed of it, because the seed will be Krishna as Govinda Gopinath Madan Mohan, right? Because you're having the feature that Krishna being Satchidananda, that means these three features, it means he as one entity is attractive, but it's these three facets of himself, you know, the eternality aspect of attraction as Madan Mohan, the chit aspect, then the attraction as Govinda, the Ananda aspect and the attraction of Gopinath, right? And so he's going to have these three features. So you can say that these three features are the seed of Kama Gayatri, because the Kama Gayatri will then be expanding that into the pastimes, right? Here he's just making what are the attractive features or how you're interacting with which features of his personality, right? And they can all be working at once. But my point is these are the features that you see, right? And then you're going to have the Kama Gayatri, meaning how that's applied within the pastimes, where that becomes dynamic. So in other words, the Kambija, you could say, is the existential elements, you know, or the static elements are not exactly static, but I'm just saying the existential aspects of them. Then you're going, but it also means that it's the existence, the action where he engages the senses, attraction of that, and then the tasting of Ananda, and that because he's tasting rasa, you know, he is rasa. And then others then interacting with him, then they also taste. So you have those three features. Then you go into the Kama Gayatri, then where he, you know, dynamically is acting in a way to attract the particular devotees. He's dealing with them in such a way, you know, to basically, yeah, conquer their hearts. And then the Ananga, how he himself is overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love that the devotees show for him, right? So these mantras have so much depth to them, because we could take that, no, but it says bija, so it just means syllable. But yes, that's, if you're defining, you know, according to the bead syllable, and that when you're using it in mantras for the technical puja, then you could say, yes, it just means that bead aspect. But here it's that this is the seed of the whole thing, right? And so you can see is that all these are there. So some will say, oh, well, these fulfill all desires. You have to be very careful with them and this and that. But since the purpose is to please Krishna, fulfill Krishna's desires, it doesn't have that danger. For those who are working in the realm of Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, they're very careful of these mantras, right? Because they don't want to bring out, because all they know when you think, deal with desire, all they know is Dharma, Artha, Kama. And if you want to get rid of that, you know, like that, then you have moksha. So that means no desire. And if you have desires, karma, Dharma, Artha, Kama, right? But for the Vaishnavs, and especially, you know, specifically the Vrajabasis, then these aspects then have that it's going to bring you to the, you know, the Lord of Rasa, who then engages in reciprocatory activities with his pure devotees or pure unalloyed devotees in such a way to attract them, and they are attracting him. Right, so you're going much deeper into this. So you get into the how much depth there is. So as we see, is Bhaktivinoda Thakur then brings out the point of the Saragrahi, is someone who then takes the essence. Right, so this is what it is. So it's not all the mechanics of the verse are this, and it does this, and all these things. Those are there because Krishna himself, it's from his swarup, from his form comes everything. So that means the existence of everything, the mechanics of everything, the experience of everything. But the whole point is that the essence is pleasing Krishna in devotion and his reciprocating with the devotees based on that. So taking that as your main aspect, then it doesn't have the, it doesn't, it then becomes something very, very pleasant, very, you know, sweet and accessible like that. It's not that you're dealing with these big, big things, because then you have those who are the, what was the other? Bharavahi. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that. So bhara means you have weight, and vahi is that they're very much burdened by the rules and regulations. It doesn't mean, you know, we're talking about like Sahaji is throwing it out. It means that for them, it's the rule that is the essence, rather than the purpose of the rule is the essence. Right? So we have to be very careful to in the beginning, we're following the rules. That's sadhana bhakti, because we don't know any different. We don't know, it means we're trying to please Krishna. We don't even know who Krishna is, let alone how to please, right? Because we're used to happiness means removing negative. It's not about anything positive, right? Because you're dealing with the material world, and it's, oh, you get all these things, means there's problems, right? Material world means problems. If I overcome the problem, I'll be happy, right? So that's how we define happiness. Or if you go into jnana, then getting rid of all these attachments and all these engagements, then I'll be happy. But in the one, I'll be happy, but I'm happy in the, you could say, the ocean of envy, because whatever you're doing, it will be, you know, people are just envious. You know, when you come to, when you're dealing with material attachment, then it's based on envy, because I'm the controller, right? So someone's more of a controller, I'm envious. Someone's less of a controller, I'm envious. Someone's equal as a controller, I'm envious. You know, so the whole thing's going to be there. It has different flavors. The one, I want to bring them down. Then the others are down, I want to keep them down. And then if they're equals, then, you know, we're afraid of them because they could be more than me, or they control me. So then there's this whole, you know, how you say, dance of superficial, friendship or something, you know, like that, that, you know, you're how much, as the friendship is there as long as you feel you're establishing yourself, keeping, means you're establishing yourself and not being overcome by the other, and then vice versa, and then it works. So the material platform, then that's what it has to offer, is envy, you know, based on I'm the controller, right? And then enjoyment, then is based on I'm the enjoyer, so therefore, you know, I'm the enjoyer, so I'm going to have all those things. I have to control, though, to do that. But then you go to the higher level, okay, my enjoyment doesn't come from controlling the material energy so that I can enjoy it. I control my senses and that the material energy that I, you know, have by renouncing everything and by giving up everything. Then I'll become the supreme enjoyer, right? I'll become the, you know, I'll become Brahman. So, but then you have the ocean of loneliness because there's nothing there. We are still jivas. We are still Satchitananda. So we still have the existence. We still have the nature for engagement, and specifically that because we're such small amounts of Satchitananda, that of service, because we have to work under a superior energy, right? We're energy and we're superior energy, but we have to work on under energy that's bigger than us. So either the internal potency or foolishly the external, right? And that's where our happiness comes from, either removing all the obstacles, dealing with the external energy, or actually doing things positively to please Krishna, right? These two aspects are going to be there. And so then those who get in the beginning, therefore, we're going to start with the rules. And we start to do those, and you need to do those. It's just like you want to learn to do anything. You start with the basics. You're learning cooking. You learn the basics of that. You know, what is a pot? You know, which side, which part of the pot goes up and which part goes down? You know, and, you know, you have to learn it quite quickly. Otherwise, you fill it up with water, put it upside down on the stove. One, the fire goes out and you have water all over the floor. And now you have gas leaking out all over the place. And you have to, you know, it's a trip. So, no, keep the pot up. It means the open side is up and the closed side is down, right? So, and then the handle should be, you know, in your direction, either straight towards you or to the side. But if you put it on the other side, then you have to reach over it and the thing's boiling and you get things. It's a trip. Yeah. So you have to learn all those basics. But once you have all those basics, it's not the pots and pans and the techniques. It's what you want to achieve by that. What is the preparation you want? What's the effect that you want? What flavor you want? What, you know, what experience you want people, what kind of, you know, what's the occasion and what is for and everything. And so you want to then arrange all that to please Krishna for these different elements. That's the essence. That's the sar. And then you have bada vahi sara grahi, right? Bada and sara. So then some hold on to the rules that's the main thing. Oh, why are you cooking it like that? You have to do it like this. No, there's unlimited ways you could cook to get various effects. And so, you know, these subtleties, then if they don't know it, then it's wrong, right? If you don't do what they do, you know, it's wrong. And if you do what they do, it's right, right? So this kind of mentality one can get stuck in when one's dealing with all the rules and regulations. So one has to be careful. So that's why Bhaktivinoda course says, then we're trying to become saragrahis. We see what's the essence of that and stick to it. But at the same time, is that doesn't mean you drop all these other things like the sahajiyas will say, you know? So then because the devotee is known as expert, it's one of the 26 qualities. So they're very expert at doing that. Like Prabhupada goes in the kitchen. You've seen the pictures. I think that farm in the south, maybe outside Orleans. No, one of the ISKCON farms, I think, unless it was in the temple in Atlanta or something. And you see him in the kitchen. He has his pot and he's cooking and doing the different things. But the way you see he's holding the spoon, the way that you can tell how good a cook. You can watch if someone puts the pot on the fire, has the spoon or whatever it is that they're using, and they're holding the pot and stirring. You can tell by how they stir how much they know in cooking. You know, like that. It's very simple. Like I remember we had one teacher in the Gurukul when he would have the, because everybody at that time stayed in the Gurukul, you know, so they were students and that. They may have been adults, but they were still there. And so for the final test, you know, after the bhakti whole Bhagavad Gita course, then he had everyone says, okay, today we're going to have a test and all that. It'll be about, you know, he mentioned like He gets in, like a half hour tests and all that. And, but nobody knew about it or anything. They're worried, this and that. So then he says, okay. So first thing is there was a big trunk outside the classroom. He said, okay, everybody go to the trunk, and then they open the trunk. They're expecting to see, all the test papers and this and that and something like that. And then they open it. It's full of brooms. Right? So then he told everybody take a broom, and then he gave everybody a place in the gurukul, throughout the gurukul. He said, now clean the area. That's all he said. Then he'd walk around and watch how they're cleaning, how they're sweeping, because you can tell just by sweeping how what is their consciousness when they're sweeping, how absorbed they are, how distracted they are, all these things, how you can tell just by how they're doing it, right? And so then he'd go around, see that, and then when they said they're finished, when they say you're finished, you call me over and it sees. Now many will sweep and leave a pile. No, you're supposed to throw the pile. So if you just swept and you're done, so that's there, but then there's that aspect of you just okay that much and that's finished, so it's not, they're not actually finished. They're not that. Then you see how good a job they did. Did they sweep nicely? This that there's no dirt, and if they got all the dirt, was it all in the pile? Did they throw the pile? If they threw the pile, was there anything left from the pile? Because sometimes you see, there means you clean, they pick up the pile, but you could tell where the pile was. But if it's like the place is clean, the pile's gone, everything's done like that, and you can go around and see, did they get in the corners? Did they get this? That leaf is over there in the rocks. Did they pick that up? All this kind of things like that. And then afterwards he went back and he gave them the grade. Because his point was, this Bhagavad Gita is to teach you to serve Krishna, right? What's the end of the Gita? It's a matter, are you going to fight for Krishna or not? Are you going to serve Krishna or not? So how well they did the service. And that was the grade they got for their Bhagavad Gita course, right? So you're telling how you're seeing what is the depth of our understanding of what service is and everything like that. So that was the point. So in theirs means the Bharavahi then has a tendency to be more a little more like the Smartas. That's their weakness. They can get into that side, but the Saragrahi, he's going for the essence. So we could say no, but the Saragrahi just doesn't care for the rules and he's just like the Sahaja. No, the Saragrahi means he's not a goes, he's not off the razor's edge onto the Sahaja side, nor off on the Smartas side. Right? And so, so the ones who tend to towards that kind of, they don't care for the rules, they don't this and that, oh no, we just chant, we're like this, then they're neither. At least the one is more pious, he sticks to all the rules, doesn't fully understand what they're for, but the other one then does. So that comes down to Niyamagraha. It's just that they reject when they shouldn't, or they accept things and not knowing what they're for. So, you're going to have degrees of any of this, but you're trying to get to that point of appreciating then what is actually going on here. Right? Like that. Is that, yeah? Okay. So this is not Gayatri itself, means the Kam Bija, right? It is also referred to as Krishna mantra, right? Or Gopal mantra, likely. Like the Gayatri, however, it fully encompasses the threefold principles of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Srila Prabhupada explains how. Chanted three times a day by Brahmanas, the famed Gayatri mantra is also said to honor this progression of deities, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath, by specifically mentioning their day names. Traditionally, Krishnaya refers to Madan Mohan, Govindaya refers to Govindadev, and Gopijana Vallabhaya refers to Gopinath. Right? So that's Srila Prabhupada, he didn't say where. Under what circumstances did Saraswati Devi give this rare and precious Krishna mantra to Brahmaji so easily? Jiva Goswami answers in his commentary to this verse that it was possible only by the mercy of Bhagavan. And why was such an unexpected mercy suddenly available? Because Brahmaji had worshipped Bhagavan in his previous life, right? So you have that aspect of how one is coming in contact with the devotees and taking it seriously because one has done these things before, right? So that's one way to tell us how long does it take for one to get serious about the process. Like I'm sure, in all of your different areas, wherever you are in the world, there's always that famous devotee different levels of that famous devotee means that he regularly comes to the temple and takes part, especially festivals or Sunday program, or, sometimes when he has things off, he comes around, he does some service. He's very pleasant, nice, takes prasad, but it's not even like there's a question that he's even thinking about getting serious and getting initiated. He may be chanting regularly, he may be, following the principles and all, but at the same time, or at least to some degree, generally they're at least vegetarian, like this. And so, but, so I've heard of devotees talk about that particular devotee, and it's been 20 years and he still hasn't. It's not like he wants to get serious, but he can't. He's never even thought about that it was something to do. Right? So that just means he hasn't done as much in his previous life. So he's not taking it so as seriously this life. But by doing this and associating, he's getting purified. He's going to advance. At some point, he'll get serious, either this life or the next. And then you see that person who... like we see that example of Marudvisa, I like to give that example, is that he's on his, world tour as a hippie to just go and see the sights and experience the places. So he comes to San Francisco to experience the, West Coast, dirty hippie vibe. And, and the place is Golden Gate Park. So he comes there. But then he notices kind of down the hill, nobody's on the hill and happening there, the circle dancing and this and that. But they're all down in the road, down at the going through the middle of the park. And there's, these big, huge, colorful carts and there's music going. So he goes down there, what's going on. When he gets down there, where he comes in is like where Subhadra's cart is. He sees, okay, it's a happening. So he takes off his backpack, throws it onto Subhadra Madharani's cart, and then follows the program, then stays for the program afterwards. And then when it's program's over and everyone leaves, he stays and helps the devotees pack up. Then he goes back to the temple with the devotees, never left again. So that means that how much they had done, and how far they got that this life, all it took was they just had to come in contact like that. It's not necessarily anyone came up to him and got him and, okay, let's preach to this guy and everything like that. He just went along with everyone, sat in the program, and decided to hang out with these guys. And hanging out, then they said, hey, we're done here, like that. We're leaving, going to the temple. And he said, oh, what's the temple? And that they, yeah, come along. So he came with them, and that was it. So that means they've done so much more, So that's all it is that it's coming. So we see Brahmaji, because of his worship in his previous life, therefore then you see, then his interest in that, he spent 100 years digging around to try to figure out, who he is, where he is, climbing down the lotus, climbing back up, this, that. And then he's given the Gopal mantra, right? And by this Gopal mantra, then he can, by chanting that, then that will bring him, because that's the bija or the seed, that will then bring him to the point of the Kama Gayatri, right? Because, yeah. So this brings us to text 26. Brahma underwent meditation for a long time and pleased the highest form of God, the indestructible Govinda, Krishna, Lord of Sweta Dweep, situated in Goloka, whose land is made of Chintamani. Govinda is worshipped by Prakriti in the form of its gunas from a distance. He has an eternal form of knowledge and bliss, which is self-revealing. Right, because it means his self reveals. It's not that, oh, I did this, that's why I got this. No, it's you did this, Krishna was happy, he reveals. It doesn't mean there's not a connection between your making the endeavor and getting a result, but it's not because you made the endeavor that produced the result. No, you did the endeavor, and Krishna reveals himself. His form is self revealing because he and his form are non-different. We always have to remember, Bhakti is independent. Krishna is independent. It's not that I did this, I get this. That's karmakanda. Karmakanda, I did my work, I get my result. That's just straight karma conduct, right? I do pious work as recommended in the scriptures. That's going to be elevating in that. I do work that's not recommended in the scriptures. I degrade myself. But the point is I did my work. I get my result, right? You know, but you know, it's just like the criminal, I rob my bank, that therefore, where's my prison sentence? You know, it's like, you know, it's just a natural, conclusion, right? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I just wonder, karma kanda and karma mimamsa, is there any difference between those two?
No. Well, karma kanda is the process, karma mimamsa is the philosophy.
Okay.
Right? Karmakanda is that section of the Veda that recommends performing, duties, in a selfless way. Right? That's Karmakanda. Jnanakanda is the section those portions of the Veda that describe detachment from the world and trying to get liberated. And Upasanakanda means those sections of the Vedas that describe worship of the Lord or his subsidiaries. Does that make sense? So karma mimamsa is a philosophy that is based on karma is all there is. So all you have to do means, in other words, their idea, you can be eternally happy by always doing pious work. Because if you do pious work, you always get good results. So if I always do pious work, I'll always have good results. I'll always be happy. But the problem is to do the pious work, there has to be all the austerity. And so when you sit back and just enjoy it, then it doesn't always work. Like we see Indra, he's got 1,000 eyes from enjoying himself, not from performing any austerity, right? In other words, he's using piety and, didn't use it in the best way possible, right? Or he ends up, stuck inside a lotus stem in Manasarovar, hiding from, thin personified in the form of a old, widow with tuberculosis, that's chasing him, like that, for killing a Brahmin like that. And, these things go on. So that's the point, is this is the flaw in their thing. And also if at any point you slip up, because as Krishna mentioned in Gita, every action is covered by fault, just like fire is always covered by smoke. There's always a little bit of something. And so there's always some fault there. And so the material world, its perfection is connecting it to Krishna, but mechanically it's never perfect. They will never be perfect. You can't make it perfect. That's an illusion that we think, I will make it perfect. We'll just do this, then it will be perfect. No, it'll never be. It will always be short something. Because it's short, you go, oh, then the way we did it was wrong. Let's try another thing. Well, no, the way you did it may have been right. That's recommended by Shastra. That's as good as it gets. But because it doesn't give 100% result, then I will start adjusting it or throw it out for something else. Well, in the Vedic system, I do this. It may not always work out perfectly, but it is the perfect way to do things, right? And so I'm doing this for Krishna. So therefore, it's perfect. I do the mechanics as best as I can. And that's as good as the material world's ever going to get. It's not going to get better than that. Anybody who thinks it will is an illusion, right? There are maybe better and worse ways of doing something, but you have to see if that's available, you know how to use it and things like that, then you do. But still, even then, it still will have some problem, right? It's just the way it is, right? And so, yeah. So that's why it has its connection to Krishna is its actual perfection, right?
Thank you, Maharaj. I never heard that.
Does that make sense? So that's one of the six philosophies. So it's the most complete on the material platform. It means you're going to have Nyaya, or logic of Gotama, then the atomic theory of Vaisheshika. They're both kind of similar. That one is about the logic and the other is applying the logic into, the atoms and how everything is and like that. And so then you're going to have the next is going to be Shankhya. Then that's going to be higher again. So it's going to be have the aspect of you're analyzing the universe, not just in atoms, but in things that you actually work with, you know, the body, the mind, this, rather than just sitting there and looking at the arm and trying to figure out what kind of atoms it is. And you just know that, okay, the part that I can, you know, like that, that's the earth part, you know, the liquid part, that's the water, you know, the digestion and those things that happen, that's the fire, the air is moving through, that's the air, right? And the spaces, everything moves through and takes up, that's the ether. Right. So I just have to know it's the body. Right. And so the body is, you know, these things, mucus, bile, air. So all the, you know, it analyzes that way and trying to elevate the consciousness out. But then, you know, it's so mechanical. And then above that's yoga, where that's acknowledged, but you're looking at then going in through the mind and everything like that and putting more emphasis on that side. And so you know, those two go together. But with those four schools, it's coming from the Vedas, and all of their philosophy is based on the Veda. But they only pull those verses from the Veda that show their philosophy. So they'll pull all the verses, they'll put them into, you know, put their commentaries into the order that puts these together to make, say, you know, seemingly a consistent philosophy. But unfortunately, they're incomplete, and they only deal with certain portions of the Veda, right? Well, Karma Mimamsa, then it doesn't matter what verse it is from the Veda, then they can understand it and analyze it and interpret it in relationship to karma, right? So that makes it more, that's why you can defeat these other four schools with Karma Mimamsa. Like we saw Krishna then when he argued with Nanda Baba and the elders in Vrindavan about Govardhan Puja and the Indra worship, Indra Yajna, then he used Karma Mimamsa because it's powerful to do, but then you have to go beyond that, you know. So we'll use logic, you know, from the first school. We might not so much. We use the Vaisheshika, the atomic, but you know, you could get into that, but you know, Shankya will use, but Kapila Munis, you know, so that's devotional. Then yoga will use aspects of that as given in Gita and things like that, Bhagavatam, and but not so much the Hatha yoga and, you know, all those aspects. And for understanding the you know, how the elements of the culture and all that work, the religion work, then, you know, that is brought out by Karma Mimamsa. But higher than that, because that's called Purva Mimamsa. I mean, yeah, I mean, Karma Mimamsa, also known as Purva Mimamsa, means first Mimamsa. Vedanta Sutra, that's Uttara Mimamsa, the higher. So it's about the soul and like that. So one's karma, one's gyan. Does that make sense? So we're in karma yoga, engaging all your actions in Krishna service, engaging your mind in Krishna service, engaging your intelligence in Krishna service. So everything, body, mind, and words. So that's buddhi yoga. Through intelligence, we are engaging the, you know, our identity, the mind, the body, the senses, all these things, because it's said that the intelligence is the closest thing to the super soul. So that's going to be where we make the connection because of being sadhakas, right? So as we get more established, then the point is then we can start to see the essential points are there. And that's the purpose of the sadhana, is just to get us to practice so that we can do that. And then there's other, it's just like, let us say you first learn to ride a bicycle. And so you're learning how to stay on the bicycle, not hit the tree, not hit the car, not hit the dog, you know, not run over the old lady, not fall off the bike, you know, all these things like that. And so you could say as, oh, like this, if I do this, I don't fall off, and I do this, then I go straight and this and that. But that's not the purpose of riding the bicycle. The purpose is to get from one point to another. So once you can ride the bicycle, you don't have to think about it. You absolutely don't think. You just ride, and you can get from one where you are to wherever you want to go. So that's what you mean by Sargra. You know, it's for getting somewhere. And therefore, it's followed nicely. So that's the thing, is the smarter. No, it's just, if you do this, if I just ride it and all that, I'm going to get there. But if you don't know where you're going just by pedaling the bicycle and not bumping into anything, doesn't mean you're going to get to actually where you want to get. You know, that's smartness. And the other is, oh, it's just about getting there. So it doesn't matter about all these rules and riding the bicycle. We don't care and all that. But they're not going to get there at all. At least the smartness are going somewhere. But where, that's another thing. But the sahajas aren't going anywhere. They're just imagining. It's like kids, you know, sitting out in the backyard and imagining that, you know, how you say they're having the battle of the five armies. And, you know, this one's the orcs and this one's the dwarves and this one's the men and this one's the elves and like that. But no, the adults look out the, you know, the kitchen window and you just see the kids running around and that and they're smiling. So they're happy. They don't see any of whatever they're seeing like that. So, yeah. So that's the sahajiyas are, you know, just a bunch of kids, you know, and smartas are like mature, grumpy kids. You're right. You know, like that. Yeah. Yeah. Teenagers like that. But, you know, still not knowing what is actually real. So Saragrahi, the Vaishnavas, then they actually understand like that, you know, because it's about, you know, worshiping the Lord. So that's the point, you know, just like before, is that, you know, just showing techniques and you're showing off techniques of cooking and yeah, see, aren't I great and all that. Yeah, but what are you cooking? No, I'm just showing us. See how I use the spoon and I'm taking the pot and I'm moving the pot and, you know, stirring at the same time. See how efficient it is. You're just stirring, you know, or just flipping the pot. I'm doing them both, you know, wow, check it out, you know, but what are you cooking? What do you mean cooking? What's the big deal? Look at what am I doing? Wow. You know, yeah. So that's the whole point, you know. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, you know, we fasted, you know, we didn't even breathe air, you know, like that, and you know, like that, you know, hands I know, we did all that, you know, it was so tough. Yeah, okay, wow, cool, wow, nice, you know. So did you do any service and that? What do you mean? No, we just, you know, didn't eat, you know, like that, you know. But you know, did you remember Krishna or anything? You know, so you know, that kind of thing is that you just want to be careful that you don't get that you're doing that to please Krishna. Now that's good. Now that's what we mean by Saragrahi. I'm fasting to please Krishna. But I'm fasting, you know, we're tough brahmacharis, you know, we don't, you know, we know no Maya and everything. No, that's the Bharavadi. But you're doing that to please Krishna, that's Saragrahi. Yes? No?
Yes, Maharaj. Okay. I just wonder one thing in this connection. Is it right to say that if I do devotional service, I will go back to Godhead? Or is something missing there?
How are you defining devotional service?
Can be the nine limbs of bhakti, chanting, okay. Vishnu Smarana.
Yeah, okay. So doing those means that you're, and why are you doing them? Means you have the nine limbs. Why are you doing those nine limbs?
Because
nine is better than eight, you know, maybe not as good as 10, but you know, nine's what you got. So,
because I don't know. I mean, there are like different people have different objectives with it, but
well, let's say we went into the kitchen and someone's in the kitchen. And they're cooking. Oh, what's happening? Yeah, I'm cooking. Oh, what's the occasion? What are you cooking for? Really? What? What do you mean? What do you mean? What are you cooking for? I'm cooking potatoes here, and I got rice over there. No, but why are you cooking it?
Mm. Well, in like, this,
what do you mean? Why I'm cooking it?
Yeah. I guess most people want to go back to Godhead. Some wants liberation. Some are just afraid of the
material energy.
Yeah.
Okay. And what will you do back to Godhead?
Have an eternal life with Krishna.
Okay. And what will you do in that eternal life with Krishna?
Hopefully be happy. In happy relationships.
So you'll be happy in relationships.
Yes.
Okay, so you'll go back to Godhead to be in happy relationships. And But is there possibly a central feature to that being happy in relationships in the spiritual world?
Yeah, Radha Krishna are the central feature.
Ah, okay. So now let's try again. How do you define devotional service?
Well, having Radha Krishna in the center.
Having Radha Krishna in the center of what?
Of the service, like their pleasure.
Of the service, okay. Yeah. And they're in the center, and what's the purpose of them being in the center? What are you trying to accomplish by them being in the center of the service?
Their pleasure, their happiness.
Ah, bingo! Yes! Yes, so trying to please Krishna. Then that's the purpose of devotional service. So that's what we mean. Saragrahi means you know that to please Krishna, Krishna's pleasure is the purpose of doing this. While Bhadagrahi is simply just getting into it, I'm doing it right and all that. Why do people, you know, don't like what I'm doing? Or why aren't others doing what I'm doing? See, it's so good and all that. And what they're doing is not as good. Or this kind of thing. But it's pleasing Krishna. Because if you're pleasing Krishna, then, and Krishna's happy, then you're happy. You know, Krishna probably gives the example of, you know, watering the tree. You water the root and all the branches and leaves and flowers and fruit all become happy. But if you try to water each, go up to each leaf, you know, and like that one is you're going to spend a long time. And it's not going to be very efficient because probably before you've watered all the leaves on the tree might die. Right, you know, like that. That's there. So that's the point. Or Prabhupada says the hand puts food in the mouth, the hand is nourished, the hand is happy. Right? So that's the mistake we've made. See, our being in the material world is simply this simple mistake. It's not that, oh, we're doing this and oh, he's doing that and oh, he thinks he's this and that. The mistake is that we think we're separate from Krishna. By doing something separate from Krishna, we'll be happy. When it's being part and parcel of Krishna, that if we do things to please Krishna, we'll be happy because we're his part and parcel. That's all the shift we have to make.
Yeah.
But because we're so convinced of this, then there's this whole very big process that can accommodate any variety of how we think we're not connected to Krishna. You know, whether it's in karma or jnana or whatever it is, or it's on the social, economic, political, sensual, spiritual, any of these things and any of their breakdowns, that we have these identities that we're something other than just the soul servant of Krishna. So the basic philosophy that we get right in the beginning, that's actually the essence. And if you focus on that, then adding more and more means something. Like if you understand the fundamental principles of cooking, then no matter how simple or how elaborate a recipe is, you know the fundamentals and you always stick to that. So for you, it's just the same thing. It just may take longer and have more steps, but it's the same thing as if you're just boiling some potatoes. Right? Does that make sense? So it's, there is no, sometimes it's thought because we're so used to this ascending process that what you first learn, then it naturally, as it goes up in detail, it's actually, that's your goal, is trying to get to the finest detail in that. When it's actually, no, it's sticking with that because ours is descending. So in Prabhupada, the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, that's what he introduced right in 1966 with the devotees. You know, the terminology, the words like this and that. And you see a lot of times, a lot of these where there's these very essential little definitions and things like that. Many of them come out of his lectures, you see, in 66.
Mm.
You know, that 66 to, I'd say 68. Then he would just talk in these technical terms like this. And so he's just giving those essential points and then you expand from there. So it's not that the expansion means you forget the fundamentals, because it's descending. The principle always works. So the principle is the soul is minute. Krishna is unlimited. The soul is part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is the complete whole. The soul is by nature servant, right? Because it can't function on its own. It has to function within one of the energies. It's not big enough to function on its own. You know, his Surup Shakti is unlimited. So it's independent like Krishna, but dependent on Krishna. You know, but as far as we're concerned, independent, dependent on Krishna. And so these points is that I'm the soul, I'm not this body, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. By pleasing Krishna, then one can come to the platform, that's the perfection of life, and then one can be situated in a relationship with Krishna and prema. How are we going to do that? By chanting Hare Krishna and serving, as you mentioned, according to those nine processes of devotion. And that which any devotee could say, you know, back in those 60s, and at least I saw it in early 70s, I'm sure it went later, but whatever it is, that, you know, you knew, but that wasn't that, that's okay, that's for beginners. No, that's the essence. Now everything else is seen in that context. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Also, that this question was also a little bit like we always say, we are not the doers. But then this statement is like as if it depends on me. If I do devotional service, I go back to Godhead. But I feel that there is something missing there, that it's not our complete Siddhanta in that statement.
That I'm not the doer.
Yeah, like I do, if I chant, I go back to God.
But if I say I'm not the doer, then that indicates that there's something else, like you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying you think it's something else, but that would what the statement would indicate. If you were not the doer, then what are we? You know, we're servants, but we're not the actual doer of the activity. Why not? It means it's not that we're not doing something, but the point is, to do something, let's say we're cooking in the kitchen. Like that. I notice I always go back to the kitchen. So you're cooking in the kitchen, but how can you cook in the kitchen if there's no kitchen?
No.
Right? And so then, okay, let's say we have a kitchen, but who provided the kitchen?
The owner. Right?
Yeah, like that. And then you have ingredients. You know, if you go into the kitchen and there's no ingredients, then, you know, you can maybe have a kirtan with the pots and pans and spoons, but not necessarily cook anything. Right? So you have to have that. Who provided that? You know? And you're going to say, oh, well, you know, this person bought it or this or that. But the point is, but at the same time, they went out and bought grains from a seller, you know, from a shop. But where did they get the grains? So they got them from the field. You know, well, how did that? The farmer grew them, but who gave the seed? Who says that by putting, one sack of seed in the ground and taking care of it, I'm going to get back 20 sacks? Whose arrangement is that? People do business and they put in a certain investment and they get back 20 times, they would consider that a really good business. I mean, like seriously good business. But that's how Krishna's world works. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, you plant one seed from an apple, right? Apple's got so many seeds, one seed, and you have this huge tree that puts out, you know, hundreds of apples. And that grows more trees that you can have more. So that means by you got one seed, you could end up with a whole orchard and have, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, or just keep going, you know. I mean, Johnny Appleseed took a sack and went all over America and planted apple trees and like that. So whatever. So the point is that is who's providing all that stuff? Who's said that by applying heat to certain ingredients, it transforms into something, you know, cooked and nice? Right? I mean, of course, they're famous for it. We know, of course, it must have been something that the French Parliament that they came up with, right? You know, because they're the ones that are into the culture and refinement and everything like that. No, okay. So, like that, where does that power come from? That there is the principle of cooking, or there's the principle of family, or there's the principle of economics. No culture can say, we invented family, we invented economics. You know, we invented, the idea that you could construct something. No, these fundamentals, the principles of material nature, no one can claim they invented, that they created, that they even came up with it. They don't even think about it. They just do it. So that's it. Where did those principles come from? Because without following the laws of those principles, nothing gets done. So the ingredients are given by Krishna. The principle that you can work is given by Krishna. And by working that you get a result. That why does it transform? Right? Why does by action and all that, things transform? Who gave the potency of that? You take some potatoes, you stick them in the cabinet in the dark, you know, that something comes up, you go for a trip somewhere, you come back after some time, you open your cabinet, and then the potatoes are growing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to, when you open the cabinet, you have to kind of move back because they might, you know, take a swipe at you or something, you know, mm-hmm. It's like that. You know, you have to go get a chair and a whip, you know, like that to keep them back and, you know, like that, you know, the whole thing. So how does that happen? Why? Why do these three things, are they there? Right? Things exist. Did something, you know, who said that there should be existence? You know, what's it? Caesar. What is it? Vidi, Vini, Vici. I came, I saw, I conquered. But he came and saw something that's already there. Where did that come from? Right? And he conquered it. But where is he now? I'll give you a hint. He died. Like that. He's not around. And someone else says, you know, that they'll go, or who is that? Mussolini. Yeah, no, he conquers. And then he's dead. Right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who it is. Then, you know, they're all gone. So, and it's still there. Italy's still sitting right there where Caesar left it. It was there before he came. It's still there now, and it'll be there in the future. Right? You know, that's why investment in boots is always a good thing. They really last a long time and everything, you know? Yeah?
Investment in what?
Sorry?
Investment
in boots.
Boots.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. No.
Yeah.
So the whole point is who's provided that? Who provided the planet? Who provided Brahma with the ingredients that he could then do the secondary creation? Right? We see Krishna, Mahavishnu, he just breathing out, everything is there. He glances at the material energy, it separates into all the different things. But the energy is his. His glance makes it separate. He enters it to make it attractive so he can do something with it. Then it's transformed into the various species and all the laws and spiritual and physical laws that govern the creation are all created. That then you take a sampling of that and put it in one of the universes. And then Brahma deals with that. So where is all this coming from? Right? So we can take part, we can go in the kitchen and we can cook, but we're not providing, you know, fire. We're not providing, you know, the potency of fire, the potency of air, the potency of water, you know, the transformative element of earth and those combinations. We're not doing that. The techniques, those are eternal. They were there before Neanderthal figured out that, you know, when they dropped whatever they went out hunted and gathered, you know, somebody dropped it on the, well, first of all, they had to figure out that there was a fire, you know, and the kid's running around with his stone and his mother's telling him, stop doing that. She catches him. He falls over. then the what do you call it? The rock hits the other rock on the side of the wall, and it starts his sister on fire, you know, and stuff like that. And they go, whoa, like this, you know. So, you know, and then you know, give it how many, who knows how many thousands of years before somebody, you know, dropped their, you know, that, you know, when they go out hunting, gathering, you know, they bring back this monster carrot and all that on the stick, you know, like that. And then, you know, somebody dropped their portion on the fire and they got cooked and ooh, you know, and all that. And probably that's why, because Neanderthal is kind of up in that area of Northern Europe and all that. So probably that's where it was, probably somewhere in France, because they started all the European cuisine and stuff like that, you know. So then, you know, but so we're going in the kitchen and all that because they didn't know about this stuff before, at least according to the modern guys and according to European history. India doesn't say that, but, you know, or China, but that's what the, you know, even the, even in America, the American Indians say that, you know, the gods came down and gave man fire and stuff like that. Well, they said Neanderthal just worked it out by accident, you know, like that, you know, because whatever is it, Lucy didn't tell him anything. She may have known everything. She didn't say or tell him anything. So they were, yeah, like that. That make any sense? Right. So the basic point is we can do things, but we're not providing it. Neither the ingredient, neither the existence of the ingredients, the existence of the laws, and the results that the laws, by being applied properly, can produce, nor the experiences, none of nothing. So we can take part in it. So therefore, we're not the doer. At the same time as Krishna's not, it's all there. He's the one behind it. He, you can say he's the ultimate cause. But the point is you do your work, you get whatever you, however you engage yourself, you get the results. Just like the child, he depending upon what they do, you know, the parents have provided the house, they provided his room, they provided the toys, and then he can play with them and that. He plays nicely. Everything works out great. He does, you know, throws his tractor through the front window. Then, you know, there's some problem. Right? You know, so it's just he's getting the result. You can't say, because the parents provide all. So that's actually their fault. No, they've shown the child what he should do, how to play in that. He does it. Things go well. He doesn't. Then he gets the reaction. So then it comes down to then what your question, what is it that they are doing or what is it you can do? It's you have, Prabhupada explains this, you have desire, right? So that you have a living entity, they inherently have desire. As soon as this living, he wants to do, he has desire. You know, you see something and the desire comes out, how to work with it because of what results you can get. Desire is there. Now, the main thing is desire to be engaged under the external energy or under the internal energy. That's the main. But action itself, you're going to get the results in whichever one you work in. You work in the external, you'll get external temporary results. You work under the internal potency, you get eternal results. It means you cook the potato sabji tonight and then, you know, it's gone tonight. You know, you have to cook it again tomorrow. So it's not that, but it's eternal. What happened like that? No, the effect of it is eternal. The relationship is eternal, that you cook that for Krishna. It will be eternally there. You know, that you've done that for Krishna. Krishna remembers. That's why it said Brahma did this in his last life. Does Brahma remember? Not at all. Nothing. So who remembers? Krishna. You served in last night, so Krishna arranged it. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's a very, very nice point, Maharaj, that we are like, we think we may be like, it's up to me. If I do the devotional service, then it's up to me that I go back to Godhead. But there are so many factors around it.
Yeah. It's up to Krishna. You go back to Godhead. Now, you want to go back to Godhead. You follow, you know, the instructions given by Krishna and handed down to us through the acharyas. Then you do that. Krishna sees you're sincere and he gives. Because otherwise, you know, it's not that any action you can do qualifies you to go back to Godhead. It's because you've done something to please Krishna under his devotees that you go back to Godhead. Because you go back to Godhead, what's going on in the spiritual world, right? Krishna and his eternal associates are interacting, right? In rasa. So the point is if, you know, while the cowherd boys are all there doing something with Krishna, and you're off in the corner, you know, playing tops on, you know, with tops on your own or something, or flying a kite on your own like that, you know, you got inspired because some lady that holds an umbrella and can fly through, you know, over rainbows, you know, started singing about flying kites and all that. So you're off flying kites and everything, right? Does that make sense? Like that. We're not even going to talk about the guys dancing on the roof, right?
Mm.
Like that. Okay. Okay. So you go there to assist the spiritual master and the previous acharyas in their service to Krishna. That's what you go to do. So if you're not doing that now, why would you be comfortable doing that then? Right? That's the whole point. You don't appreciate the association of devotees here. You won't appreciate it there. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that you have to see the essence. You're taking Krishna prasad. You're doing things to please Krishna. It's in relationship to Krishna. You're singing Krishna's name. That's what's going to do. That pleasing him is what makes it work. Like I'm thinking, I do kirtan, but, you know, if we chant Hare Krishna, they'll know we're Hare Krishna. So we're going to chant, you know, a Shiva or a Ganesh bhajan. And so like that, then the people get attracted. And then like this, then because they're attracted to us, then, you know, somehow or another, that's devotional service and all that. But no, it's because they're chanting Hare Krishna. Krishna's pleased. Then within the heart of that individual, he inspires them. And if they take it, then they get interested in devotional service. It has nothing to do with that you sing so nicely or, you know, stuff like that, right? There are people who, when they sing, it's not so great. I remember one, what was it? Like in the 70s, there was one devotee who was one of the major, you know, like nowadays we kind of have celebrity kirtaneers. So he was like a celebrity kirtaneer. Can't remember what his name was. Indian devotee, very simple, very nice. He was a pujari, I think, in Vrindavan originally. Or he was in Mayapur, and then I think went to Vrindavan, whatever it is, Bengali, worked between the Vrindavan and Mayapur. And, but one thing about him is keeping the beat, he couldn't do that. Like that. But he was one of the best kirtan, especially bhajans. He was one of the best in the movement. So, you know, just that simplicity. But it was so appreciated because the mood was right. So other people played kartals. He didn't play kartals. He didn't play mridanga. Someone else played the kartals and mridanga. That's playing. He can sing with it. But if you gave him the kartals and he had to play it and sing, it wouldn't happen. Does that make sense? So it's not about, yeah, how technical it is and this. And, oh, I learned professionally music, so therefore I will be the best character. No, it's the sincerity with which it's done. Now, Narottam Das Thakur and the other acharyas, what they knew about music, you know, would be more than what, let's say, your top musicians in India would know now. But it wasn't about the technical point. It was that you're trying to do something for Krishna. So you do something very nice. Does that make sense? You know, it's about how it's going to be nice for Krishna. That's what you do. And so then you're using all the technical abilities, but it's just to produce something nice. Like nowadays you see these chefs, they do something wild, you know, deconstruct the pizza. They take a recipe and deconstruct it into the parts, and you have this here, and, you know, the sauce over here and the cheese you put in the pile, and then take one of those little, you know, little cans with a, you know, blowtorch, and then you melt it on the side, and then you do this, and it's all over, and then you look at it, it's done so, I mean, it's like a painting, you know, it's so amazing, and people, you know, pay, you know, thousands for that, and wah, and everything like that, but it's so much easier if it's all just together, and you take a slice and pick it up and stick it in your mouth. Right? So if you're cooking for Krishna, you're going to make something that he can just take and eat, not that he has to then play around with it. Oh, wow, this is so fabulous. Oh, this is amazing. This is, no, it's the taste. You always talk about the taste. Of course, everything looks fabulous. It smells wonderful. You know, the texture, everything, but it's always talked about the taste. Because that's the point. If the food looks fabulous, but there's no taste, what does it matter? You know, and if it tastes fabulous, even as a very simple presentation or like that, it's wonderful. Does that make sense? So it's still, it's about the essence. So when you desire to assist, you know, one's seniors in their service to Krishna, and that's what you want to do, that's the only thing that's important, then you'll be comfortable in the spiritual world. But otherwise, if you're trying to be independent here, if you get there, you won't be happy because, you know, means take for example, you have Krishna and the Cowherd Boys. They're coming along, and you know, it's kind of that time. They've been running around a while, so someone comes up with the idea. I'm not sure if Krishna did, or Balaram, or one of the Cowherd Boys about that. You know, about eating something. So Krishna, oh, let's go to these. There's a Brahmin house here. You know, the Brahmins are here. Let's go there and ask them because, of course, they're Brahmins. They give in charity, you know, like this and that. They're going to care for the kids. So then they sent some of the Cowherd Boys were sent to the Brahmins to ask them for, you know, how you say, something to eat and say that it's for Krishna and Balaram. No. I think he said, say it's for Balaram because, you know, he's from a Kshatriya background. So he's probably going to get more credit than Krishna, who's that will just be seen as a Vaishya, right? And so because it's obvious his mother is Rohini, and Rohini is the wife of Vasudeva, though she's living in Braja, right? Does that make sense? So it's known he is son of Vasudeva, but Krishna, it's not necessarily known until later, right? So they go there. And then they said, you know, dear sirs, please give us something to eat for, you know, Krishna and his friends and like this. And they say, no, we're doing the yajna and we can't do that and all that now. And then the Cowherd Boys, these are kids, right? Cowherd Boys. And they start talking about the technical points of the yajna. They say, no, but at this point, because you finished this part of the yajna, this gap here that you have, you can actually distribute food and do all these things now before you take up the next one again, because there's certain places, because the yajnas go on forever. So you have to have places where you have gaps, where you can do things, where you can go prepare or cook or go take your bath or sit and discuss about the philosophy and stuff like that. So they mentioned that to them and they still weren't interested. So then I'm not sure how it worked out, but then the wives of the Brahmins, they brought all the stuff out to Krishna and Balaram, you know, and then they got love of Krishna and everything like that. And then the husbands were thinking, wow, you know, we could have done that, you know. And then they thought, yeah, no, we should go and visit Krishna and Vrindavan. But then they thought, but if we go on the road, because like that, then the constables of Kamsa will see us and then ask, you know, if you don't like this, and so we'll get troubled. So, you know, and that's one of the qualities of devotional service and the mode of goodness is that you are worried about the trouble you'll get from the difficulties that come up, right? Rather than you know, that the trouble is part of the thing. You try to avoid the trouble. And so they didn't go. So they maintained that independence and all that. And they're right in Braj, in Krishna's pastimes. Right? They're in the Boma Leela. It's right there in the Bhagavatam. Right? But that's the point. They're maintaining their independence. And they're there in the Leela. But they still can't take part. So the point is if you don't like it here, you won't like it there. Right? If you don't like devotional service here, it's not going to change there. It's the same thing on its, you know, perfectional platform. There are no anomalies. There are no everything like that. But if we're not interested here, that anomaly of not being interested will still be there later. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we try to be enthusiastic and try to, you know, to the best of our degree. So it's the sincerity in the desire that's the main drive. You have that. So this is not a sahajya thing. Oh, it's just the heart and this and that. It's that you are committed to, I want to do this. I may not be very good at it, but I'm going to keep trying until I become better. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj, very much.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's there. Now, at the time of death, you remember Krishna, you will go back to Godhead. But the point is if to that degree you're advanced, that's where you're going to continue from. Now, you don't have the obstacle of the external conditioning, the gross body, subtle body. You have your spiritual body. But still, so you're on the liberated platform, but you still have to create the positive that's about Krishna. Like what you mentioned before, were things of, you know, situations or action, but it wasn't about what its goal was. Remember when we went through, what are we doing? And he said, the nine processes, and well, how do you define mm-hmm. that? Because some people do those nine processes, but they're doing it for another purpose. You know, like you said, they want liberation, they want this, you know, the material world is very tough on them. They want out of here. Now, going back to Godhead means you're out of here. So liberation comes along with devotional service. So you don't have to separately endeavor for it. Right? You endeavor for the devotional service, then it'll get, it means you can mechanically go through it, you know, to help. But the point is that ultimately, it's the doing it, the devotion itself is what's giving the result. The mechanical, you're engaging, okay, your nature and the consciousness. So that's fine. But the point is that it's about that essential point. So one should always know the essential point. Then wherever one is and however much one's developed, then things will go very well. Does that make sense?
Yes, my best.
Yeah. So desire is the thing. You want, that's how you get. If you don't want, then why will you get? Right? Does that make sense? Krishna is there. You know? Jatila, Kotila, Abhimanyu, they see Krishna. They're interacting with Krishna directly. But they're not interested in devotion. They don't develop it. Not at least externally, you know. I mean, they're part of the internal potency, they're there for the pastime. But the point is that they're not showing any interest in devotional service. And it's right there. Even though they happen to be living with, you know, the goddess of devotion in their house, and still they don't pick it up because there's no interest. You know what I'm saying? That's why association is important, is then by being with others who are interested, we might notice that, you know, we might notice and we might therefore pick up on that and become serious ourselves. Does that make sense? So that's what is there. But we see is still you have to become interested. Because otherwise, you know, Jatila, Kotila, Abhiman, they're not interested. Kamsa's not interested. He's personally interacting with Krishna. I mean, Krishna is personally punching him in the face, you know, but still he's not thinking, you know, I should surrender. No?
Yeah. It has to be, I heard that the Brahmana's wives, thanks to their association, then with the, I think, the gopis, then they became, that's why they were more advanced than their husbands, because of the association.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, it's all about go ahead. Because the point is, the process is the process. And it has effect whether we understand it or not. But if we at least appreciate it and are trying to take part in it, then it's so much more dynamic. Just like people are walking down the street and the devotees are going with Hari Nam, they don't understand the holy name and this and that, but it has effect. But it's when you're conscious of the fact, you consciously decide, I believe in the eternal form of the Lord, right? And that the process is devotional service, then you develop faith. But the point is that difference in faith is the faith of Krishna's form is eternal. That's the thing that's learned. I mean, that's gained. That's where you call it Shraddha. Before that's called Agyata Sukriti. Right? But you have to accept, because the Hindus also, they worship Krishna, they have faith in Krishna, they go to the temple. But if you, much of the time, if you ask, they don't think that his form is eternal. They think the Brahman is actually the real thing. But, you know, because it's hard, you know, they're simple people and all that, and they know that, and so they can't absorb themselves in Brahman. Therefore, they worship a deity, and of that, then they worship Krishna. They prefer Krishna over any other form, or some prefer Ram like that, or, you know, like Vishnu like this. But they don't, if they don't think, understand the form is eternal, then that's not Shraddha that we're talking about. It's going to be a piety because they're doing all that for their karma or for their gyan. It's going to elevate them on that path through Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. But it's not going to give them bhakti. But because they're doing that, you know, that elements of devotion, it has written into it that they would, you know, go to programs that are, you know, that sadhus speak at. They're going to hear, you know, kirtan. They're going to hear lectures. You know, they're going to take prasad. Now, if it's you know, sampradayic Vaishnavas who they hear from and hear the kirtan and take prasad, now they get contacted with the actual devotional side. So that action, that result is outside of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. And that goes on to their Agyata Sukriti. That's not just piety. And then that builds up. Then they develop that faith in the eternal eternal form of the Lord. Then when they have faith that pure devotion is the goal, that's when they take up seriously sadhu sangha. That's when they move from step one to step two. And then in that association, they're going to, you know, Prabhupada mentions that you remove the anarthas in their heart by following bhajana kriya, by following the process. Right? That'll bring them to dridhashrata, where nothing else other than devotional means, yeah, pure devotion, but I'll do my karma, my gan, and this and that, I'll get there. But then when they get the point, no, only bhakti gives bhakti. And nothing else is there. It can be used as a tool, just like in cooking. It's not that the pots create cooked food. No, they can assist in your cooking, but they can't do anything on their own. Then that brings you to anishta. Right? That brings you to taste. Taste brings you to attachment. You know, you're attached to serving Krishna in a particular way. That brings you to bhava. Right? And then bhava brings you to prema. But in that, the whole thing all throughout is the association of devotees. Does that make sense?
Yes, Mothers.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. So then. Okay. So Krishna has an eternal form of knowledge and bliss, which is self-revealing. He is seated on a large throne in the pericarp of a lotus with millions of stamens and thousands of petals, playing a flute with his lotus mouth, and is surrounded by the gopis and praised by other associates. This verse describes how chanting this mantra satisfied Brahma's desire to become empowered to create the universe. Brahma then worshipped Govinda in Goloka using the verses of praise which follow. Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur explains how Brahma had personal motives, yet was sensible enough to approach Krishna for their fulfillment rather than worship other, quote-unquote, mundane gift-giving deities. Mundane gift-giving deities. That's such exact terms, right? You know. Then I think this must be Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. True devotion is unalloyed devotional activity, free from all mundane desire. The devotion of Brahma, etc., is not unmixed devotion. But there is a stage of unmixed predilection, even in devotion, for the attainment of one's selfish desire. Right. So he's saying is that even you have a selfish desire, but there's still that I'm going to do that by serving Krishna in you know, purely. You may want to get where you want, like you were saying, go back to Godhead or be freed from these liberated, or you know, to get rid of, you know, or develop something or do something. It's for Krishna, but there's some mix of one's own interest in there. And so then one is doing that, but there's doesn't mean that there's not some yeah, so but there's some unmixed element in there and why you're driving for it. So that's the point. It says this has been fully described in the concluding five shlokas of this work. That is the easiest method of divine service prior to the attainment of self-realization by fallen souls. Right? So he's pointing out that in those last five verses, basically it's that aspect of how you can connect everything that you're doing to Krishna. You follow. Now, I'm doing this for Krishna means I have to do it how Krishna would like it to be, how to please Krishna. And by working in that way, then Krishna being pleased, then I advance. So I may have some interest to gain in that, but by having that actual point to want to please Krishna, then one, your desires is fulfilled, but at the same time is that desire is removed and one actually advances towards pure devotion. That's the point. Krishna points out he fulfills desires in such a way that the devotee doesn't ask for any more of that, because it's about the pure relationship between Krishna and the devotee. That's the interesting thing, right? Means, in other words, being God means he has the best facilities in that, because he actually is the source of all the facilities. So he can do anything he wants. He can do that, but he does specific things because those give the highest taste. Just existing, he's already doing, right? As Brahman, everything is resting on Brahman. That means everything's resting on the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. That's what everything is based on, because everything that exists has qualities, right? So those qualities are from Brahman. Right? Then that he can, you know, manipulate that. He's already doing that as Paramatma. You know, as God, he does that. But what gives increased taste is the exchange of affection, of love between him and the devotees. So action there then gives the highest. So that's why it appears that it's about getting something done. No, it's about interacting with Krishna. Right, so the gopis aren't, you know, taking the milk out to go sell it to make money so they can, you know, put that extension on their, you know, their house like that, you know, that, you know, that conservatory that they always wanted out in the back and everything like that, you know. No, it's about if they're inside their house and Jatila is there, then very hard to interact with Krishna. If you're out, but Jatila is not going to just let you go out and walk around on the road. Right? No, you're going out on the road to sell milk, and that will bring money, and that will then take care of Jatila's desire. So therefore, you're going out on the road carrying the milk. Then Krishna's going to come. Then they can interact. So all the things that are there, just, you know, they're taking the cows out. That way they can go out and be with Krishna. If they didn't take the cows out, then the boys can play with Krishna, but in Mother Jashoda's house, you know, you have to be very reserved. You can't be, you know, full, you know, 100% boy, you know, like that. You have to be, you know, very peaceful, reserved, you know, very pleasing to the adult ladies, boy, right? But if you take the cows out, but why do you take the cows out? Well, you know, I thought because that's their duty. Where does it say that? The Shastras say. So in other words, they follow the Shastra, you know, to be able to be with Krishna. But it's not they're following that because they'll get the pious and this and that. That's the things that they do for duties. Jatila, now her, it's about the passionate element. She's going to get benefit from this. But we see Krishna and Ananda Baba, when they discuss about it, then it's our duty, and we're supposed to selflessly do our duties and all that, you know. So you have this wonderful mix that how Krishna's arranged everything. Right? Yeah. Text 27. How much time? Okay. The initiation of Lord Brahma, right? So he got the Gopal mantra. He wasn't initiated. You know, you could say it's a preliminary aspect. But then by that, then he could get, that's why it's called Kambija. It's just the seed, right? Then the embodiment of the Vedas, the Gayatri mantra, emanating from the sound of Krishna's flute, after entering his ears, means Brahma's ears, appeared in the four mouths of Brahma. Uttering the Gayatri mantra, Brahma, being purified, attained second birth from the original guru, Krishna. Right? So when Krishna received the Kama Gayatri, right, coming from the sound of Krishna's flute, right, then that entering his ears, then appeared in his mouth, then he's chanting that mantra. Now you could say now he's attained the status of initiation. Does that make sense? Yeah. This Kama Gayatri is described. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, second birth from the original Guru Krishna. This Kama Gayatri mantra is described by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as, quote, sequel of the 18-lettered mantra, end quote, meaning mentioned previously, means the Gopal. It's the sequel of Gopal mantra. So the Gopal is the seed, you know, the Kambija, and now this is a Kama Gayatri. After receiving it directly from the mantra's presiding deity, Krishna, means presiding deity of the Kama Gayatri is Krishna, and he received the mantra from the presiding deity. So that's very special, right? Brahma attained the status of being twice born. The significance of the mantra is elaborated as follows. Quote, the sound of Krishna's flute is the transcendental blissful sound. Hence, the archetype of all Veda is present in it. The Gayatri is Vedic rhythm. It contains a brief meditation and prayer, right? Because it's rhythm, because it's got 24 syllables, you know, it's 8, 8, 8, you know, so that means there's a meter to it and all that. And it has a brief meditation and prayer, right? Kama Gayatri is the highest of all the Gayatris, because the meditation and prayer contained in it are full of the perfect transcendental sportive activities, which are not to be found in any other Gayatri. Right? Others will talk about, you know, some quality of the particular deity that it's about and things like that. But it doesn't talk about, as they said here, the sportive quality that Krishna has in his pastimes in Vrindavan. Right? In this Gayatri, the realization of the transcendental pastimes of Sri Gopijana Vallabha, after perfect meditation and the prayer for the attainment of the transcendental God of love, are indicated. In the spiritual world, there is no better mode of endeavor for securing the super excellent rasa bedewed love, right? So through the Kama Gayatri, that then one can attain to that mood of, you know, pure unalloyed devotional service, as we see in the residents of Vrindavan, and then specifically of the gopis, because then it's about that the, you know, it's also said means that the mantra is not different from Krishna. It is Krishna, and he's mentioned here, Gopijana Vallabha. And then, but that means it's also about the gopis, right? The Gopijana, and who's the head of that? That's Radharani. So it's also said to be and indicate Srimati Radharani, because if you have pastimes, this means Krishna interacted with Radharani in the association of the gopis and the, you know, overall scene of Braja. So that's all going on in this mantra that you won't find in any other Gayatri. They just basically give, like it said, meditation and prayer on a specific, you know, aspect, you know, just static aspect or existential aspect of the deity, you know, or something, you know, specific quality and something like that, or attractive feature, but not about the pastimes. It appears that it's the only one that talks about pastimes and specifically of Krishna and the gopis. Yes.
Maharaj, is this mantra only in our Sampradaya, and at what point it appears in our Sampradaya, this Karma Gayatri and this Govol mantra?
Means the other sampradayas know about it. It's a general Gayatri that's in, you know, wherever in the Vedas the Gayatris are listed, it's there. It's just that most of the other sampradayas are, they tend to not get involved with it. You know, because they're saying if you chant that and you're not fully pure, then, you know, so many crazy things can happen. But the point is we're chanting it because it pleases Krishna. So therefore, we're not worried about effects of karma and jnana like that. Does that make sense? Because on the platform of karma and jnana, you have to do something, you know, basically as perfectly as possible. You know, like you do one of those Vedic yajnas, you can't, during the whole time of the whole ceremony, you can't say one syllable wrong. And we're not meaning syllable, just means you said the syllable. The syllable has one, the proper pronunciation that we would understand, but the syllable also has its proper length, its proper emphasis, its proper tone. You know, it has to be going in sequence nicely. It's not that one's going faster, one's slower, and this and that. You're changing the speed all throughout like that. Does that make sense? You know, so it has so many things, and all that has to be done. And those who are doing those Vedic yajnas, they can't be looking at a book. They don't have it memorized to the point where it's just second nature. They shouldn't be doing those yajnas. Not for someone else. Maybe their house and they're learning and the Gurukul, or they're doing for themselves and they're doing, and you know, like this. But when they're doing these big, big, huge yajnas, these like that, you can't use the books. You know, so that means you have to know it so well and have learned it so well that not one syllable will be wrong. Because if one syllable is wrong, the whole thing is it won't work. You know, because you're thinking it's the rule that gets me. The smarter thinks, I do the rule, I get the result. So therefore, that rule better be perfect, then you're going to get the result. But in devotion, it's about, I do it to please Krishna, therefore, it already is perfect. And then the result's going to be up to Krishna. He wants more of this, less of this, whatever. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's there. It's just that others that I know of don't use it, at least amongst the Shris and Madhvas. I'm not about sure about the Nibbarkas of all of us, but I haven't heard that they use. You know, I've never come across that's theirs. You know, those generally stick to like Krishna Gayatri, Radha Gayatri, you know, that kind of thing. So it's always there. So then it would have. I mean, means that Brahma's received it. So Brahma would give it to Narad, Narad then to Vyas, Vyas to Madhva, you know, like that, or you know, some down, or even if it doesn't go down there, to it comes down for Lord Chaitanya. So you know, for us, you know, the Sampradaya, you could say, is it has its origins there, but it starts with Lord Chaitanya. So therefore, the particular groupings of mantras, what we chant and all that, that comes from that aspect. You know. Is that okay?
Yeah. No, I just come across people who, like some envious people are maybe, that they say that, you know, where did you get this? Like, what was the point where you started chanting? Like, because we say that all mantras should be received in parampara, otherwise they don't have power.
Yeah, so it means we have it. We have it. It's there. So it's just because I'm not the scholar, that doesn't mean it's that. Because point is they don't know, so how can they be so strong? They could ask a question, but this thing, no, it all has to be here and like this, and if you don't know, then it's this and that. You don't know, so then why are you talking? You know, you want to talk so much, but you don't know, so then why are you saying? You're saying, I know, but do you know? You know, that's another thing. That's just being annoying, but you know, what's the business? We have our mantras. It's come down. We've gotten it from our acharyas. And so that's we trust that. They've heard from their acharyas. So therefore, then that's there. If these are non-sampradayic, these are just Hindus and all that, you know, they can go, you can point to any, which direction there's a, you know, a sizable lake that they can, you know, avail themselves to go jump into. You know, and if there's sampradaya, it's kind of like, you know, like that is like, you have to understand that it's come down. You mean like if you come from, you've heard things, Ramanujacharya gave you these things, that's why you're using it. You know, but can you tell me that, you know, Ramanujacharya received the, you know, the Om Namo Bhagavate, I think, was it? Is it Narayanaya or something? Om Namo Narayanaya, like that. But did his guru, Yamunacharya, was he chanting that? You know, was this, you know, was this the one like that? So you can go into all these things. It's like, what's the use? You know, are they Vaishnavas, or they're just there to find fault? You know, it means there must be some technical point on where it comes in. But the point is this, Brahma got the mantra. It's right here, verse 27, the initiation of Lord Brahma. That's where it came. And the Gopal mantra then came in, what do you call it? Was it divine voice in 24? Right? So that's where it came from. Now, how it got to us exactly, you know, somebody carried it in a Louis Vuitton bag, or, you know, it came in a, you know, a nice biodegradable, you know, handmade, brown paper bag, you know, like that, or, you know, whatever it is that's not the important thing. The point is we have it, and the most likely is that they don't have it, and so they, you know, why do we have it? You know, so it's you know, I can't expect that kind of aggressive attitude is based on, you know, the 26 qualities of a Vaishnav. You know, so therefore it's just, you know, who cares? You know, like that. There's a saying, you know, that everybody, you know, has the right to their own opinion, but they understand, have to understand is just because they have the right to their own opinion doesn't mean they have the right to take their opinion and try stuffing it down everybody else's throat. That they don't have the right for. And if they're from another sampradaya, bug out. You know, they want to bother our acharyas, then we just say, so actually you're not a very mature Vaishnav, because the mature Vaishnav respects senior Vaishnavas. And if you can't respect our sampradaya and our line, you're not a very mature Vaishnav. So I don't think we should be having this conversation, because, you know, it's improper. You know, you should know your limits and not step beyond them. And if you're going to go after the acharyas of other sampradayas, that's way beyond your, you know, what do you call it? Way beyond your ken, right? Yeah, they don't have the security clearance. So these kind of things are just, they're only asking you because they figure you don't know. And if you did know and you could tell them, they'd be shocked. So they're only just doing because they think they can harass, and that way they feel good. But this is not proper, you know, Vaishnav discussion, and even if amongst the Hindus, it's not proper. Like that. And if they're caste Goswamis, then one, they shouldn't be saying these things because they go back to the Goswamis. But if they're trying to say, well, where did you get it exactly? Because in other words, they're trying to say, you got to get it where I got it and all that. So you got to connect yourself to us. And this is just, you know, bogus Indian guru 101. So you just, you know, smile and change the subject. Yeah.
Yes. I was just wondering if there was connection with you said that our the spontaneous devotional service started with Madhavendra Puri, if there was any connection there, maybe it started, or if there's any such connection with this mantra and this.
The point is Brahma got the mantra, so that's where it is. It's in the Sampradaya, and where it comes up or down, and this is another thing. So like that, if Brahma has it, I'm sure Narad Muni has it, and, you know, he's quite an active person in the Brahma Sampradaya. You know, so they want a date and a time and, you know, place and exactly this time and how quickly, I mean, how much time do they take to chant the mantra? Do they do it really quick, or they spread it out, or, you know, gave you one syllable a day over 24 days, or, you know, like, you know, I, you know, what's the point of their asking? If they want to know, you just say, oh, how did it get like that? You know, it comes from Brahma. Oh, nice. But if it's like, you know, how do you get it like that? Who are you guys? You know, this and that, you know, this kind of thing. We don't need, we got, the world is full of false ego. We don't need more of it.
I was wondering.
Sorry?
This last one for myself. I was wondering for myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it could be. But the point is who knows? Like that. I don't know. I'm sure somebody knows. Like that. Because it hasn't been something that was ever a doubt, so I never looked into it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol, Gaura Hari Bol.